before they get better. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program, in which we try to criticize some of the movies available in the market, and then based on the theme we have in mind, especially a religious theme. We criticize these movies not usually or necessarily based on their artistic features and characteristics. For the last two episodes, we started criticizing the movie Patriot's Day, directed by Peter Berg. It was produced in 2016. It's an American action thriller film about the Boston Marathon bombings. I have two brothers, Brother Hussein and Sayyid Abdullah, sitting in the studio with me, trying to help me have a better critique of this movie. Assalamu alaikum, brother Sayyid Abdullah, and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for giving me the chance to be here.
Brother Hussein, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, glad to be here.
Welcome. Let's take a listen to a part of this movie, Patriot's Day, directed by Peter Berg, and we'll be back.
The Boston Marathon tragedy is being described as the worst act of domestic terrorism since the September 11th attacks. However, unlike the attacks on the World Trade Center...
You know that's bullshit, right, Manny?
Yes.
9-11? Muslims didn't blow up those buildings. The U.S. government did.
Yes, I know.
You know?
I know.
Are you saying yes because you believe it, or are you saying yes because you don't want us to kill you?
Sorry, I don't know who did it, 9-11.
Yo, you need to educate yourself, dog. For real, that's the problem in this country. No one knows what goes down. America's fake as...
The government did all that shit. The government. To make Americans hate real Muslims. A lot of people who say they were 9-11, they're all actors.
I didn't know that.
And now you know.
Of course you didn't. You're conditioned by the media.
Yeah.
Back to the program. Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Brother Hussein and Sayyid Abdullah helping me as two of my guest speakers in the studio with me, trying to criticize the movie Patriot's Day, directed by Peter Berg. Well, according to that part, Brother Hussein, the Boston Marathon bombing was described by the news on the media of the car, or on the radio of the car, basically, which was hijacked by the two terrorists. It happened to be the Chinese guy's car, the poor Chinese guy.
Meng, yeah.
All right. So these two terrorists, the media calls this terrorist act, the Boston Marathon bombing, as the worst act of terrorism since 9-11. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Then one of the two terrorists, asks the owner of the car, the Chinese guy, "The U.S. government blew up the Twin Towers." This is what he says. Exactly. Quote, unquote. All right? Not Muslims. What do you think? What about the Bin Laden's tape of confession?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, of course. I mean, if they did really do it, then they'd have a guy to blame and he'd have to make a tape. I'm not saying that Bin Laden didn't do it. I'm not saying that he did or he didn't. But, you know, it really goes back to one quote that the same guy, mm-hmm. Zahar or something, he says to the Chinese hostage, right? He tells him, you're conditioned by the media. And I think the media is helping the government cover up a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they're paid to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it might just be true that, you know, they make these scenarios up and these big explosions and
yes.
so much drama and terror just to frame the people who they want to frame, Muslims.
I see. What do you think, Sayyid Abdullah, about the same question? Do you think Bin Laden did it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, I do believe Bin Laden did it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, from where Bin Laden is sitting, he done for a cause, for a mm-hmm. holy cause.
Mm-hmm.
Even to be, I mean, from the media perspective, the first Bin Laden rejected. He said they had nothing to do with it. If mm-hmm. you remember when the event happened, a few years back, Bin Laden took responsibility and he said yes, he did it.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I have no doubt in my mind that he actually did.
I see. Okay, before I ask you another question, let's take a listen to another part of this movie. It's a very important part. Just stay with us and don't go away.
SAC Deloria, looking for SAC Deloria.
Rick Deloria.
Hi, I'm Mike Thomas. May I have a word with you? We're gonna handle the interview from here. Have any of you spoken to her yet?
Not yet. This is everything we have on her.
We're good. We're good. Thank you, gentlemen. We will take it from here.
Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. You disrespect the Prophet?
Wa alaikum salam.
Catherine, are there more bombs? My name is Veronica. I was born in a tent with three walls that said UNICEF on the sides to a mother who could not write her own name. You were born in a room full of flowers and balloons. Your mother is a nurse. She calls you Katie.
You know nothing about me.
Your best friend, Gina Crawford, works at a Starbucks in Cambridge where you tried to convert her to Islam. Between skinny caramel macchiatos, are there more bombs? More bombers? You sent Gina a text right after the bombing that said, a lot more people are killed every day in Syria and other places. Innocent people. Did you see the footage on television? We found explosive residue from the bombs in your apartment, on your kitchen table, in your kitchen sink, the kitchen where you made breakfast for your daughter. Are there more bombs?
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We are criticizing the movie Patriot's Day, directed by Peter Berg. Produced in 2016. I'm Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my two guest speakers in the studio, Brother Hussein and Sayyid Abdullah. Sayyid Abdullah, there is this FBI or CIA Muslim-looking woman
mm-hmm.
coming into the interrogation room, trying yeah. to integrate the wife of the terrorists who they captured, right,
mm-hmm.
To discover if there are more bombs.
Yeah,
she doesn't answer the greetings of salam, which yeah. we all know is obligatory as a Muslim, right? Mm-hmm. The integrator, the woman integrator, asks, you disrespect the Prophet.
Mm-hmm.
Would you talk about that part, please?
Okay, so they are obviously, how should I put it, Islamically, they're wrong. I mean, in this movie, the few things about Islam, about Arabs, they got wrong. One of the things that caught my attention is, you know, there's a few scenes where they show the Arabic TV channel, yes, the news channel, and all the Arabic, the fonts are cut.
Yeah, that's something. Yeah, right? They always do that.
They tried to make it look like it's an Arabic, but they couldn't get it right. I mean, this is a simple thing. You know, yeah, you have a high-budget movie,
yeah,
but you can't get the Arabic fonts to appear correct.
Yeah, the budget was $45 million.
Yes,
by the way.
Yeah, so it's a lot of money to spend, yeah, and then you can't get one scene with proper Arabic fonts that looks like an actual Arabic channel. It looks like
does it happen? Like,
I don't know.
Like high budget movies such as this.
I don't know.
One.
I that's what I'm saying. So sometimes the people that they have working for them,
yeah,
obviously they miss these kind of details. So one of the things that they miss.
Do they have a lot of like advisors to the movie?
They should, but I was surprised. I mean, how could you make such a huge mistake? I mean,
yeah,
because you're going to have people, Arabs, watching. And then it got me thinking, because they showed Arabic, they showed Chinese.
Yeah.
What if they all got the other languages wrong too?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be like, you know, it's very embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a scandal.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know. So that's, so when it came to this idea, when she said to her, Salaam alaikum, a few times, and she refused to reply.
Yes.
And then she said, you disrespect the Prophet. What does Salaam alaikum have to do with the Prophet?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, Salaam alaikum is an Islamic greeting. It's Jews say Salaam.
Shalom.
It's a greeting. Yeah. What does it have to do with the Prophet? And then when she said to her, oh, you know, you disrespect the Prophet, then she replied.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what did you get that from? From which book?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I don't want to reply, as a Muslim, I have the right to not reply to you if I feel that I'm not secure.
Yes.
So saying Salaam Alaikum, saying I give you peace.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you want to return that peace back to me or not? That's up to you.
Yes.
So, yes, as an Islamist, wajib to reply the Salaam. But if I don't feel safe,
yes,
I'm not going to give you my Salaam.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the things they got wrong. It has nothing to do with the Prophet.
I see.
But that's what they're trying to put in the minds of the people,
mm-hmm,
that their religion, whatever they get, their ideology, it comes from their Prophet. It comes from their Islam. It goes to the root. So, in fact, this is an indirect attack to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Because, you know, once you hear the word Prophet, mm-hmm, and Salaam alaikum, they're both Arabic, she's a terrorist. Okay, the Prophet is a terrorist. So they're trying to play on, like, the psyche of people,
mm-hmm,
without them realizing. Otherwise,
exactly,
like I said, what is the relationship and the link between Salaam alaikum and the Prophet?
I see.
Well, okay. Why didn't she say, why did you disrespect Allah, for example?
Mm-hmm.
Or she could say to her, if they got the people to write the script correct, say, isn't it compulsory to reply the salam?
Yes.
That would make more sense. That would be Islamically accurate.
No, but that's kind of, see, after the scene, like after the interrogation session, right? She goes out and she takes off the hijab, and it's clear that she's just an actor. So it kind of shows that, you know, she didn't
No, the lady herself, when she presented herself to the lady, she said to her, like, she was from a war-torn Islamic country.
Yeah, but that's all a lie.
You saw the African countries.
He denied her a lawyer, right?
No, so the idea is, it's not whether the lady herself is a Muslim or not. The idea is, why would you try to bring a concept,
mm-hmm,
or two concepts, they don't match?
Of course, yeah.
Like, even whether you're an actor, or even if you're an actor, you have to play your role correctly so the other person would believe you. So if she said to her, isn't it wajib compulsory to reply the salam?
Yeah.
It makes more sense. And it's like, oh, yeah, actually, yeah.
I think she says something
disrespect
about
the
that
prophet?
Later. Yeah.
What? But doesn't this idea, the concept of, like, returning the salam, the greetings, let's say, coming from, like, one of the hadiths, for example, reported by the Prophet?
What do you mean?
Like, where does this idea, this concept come
the
from?
The concept
that
of
you
replying
have to.
It's actually in the Quran, whether حَيُّتُمْ بِتَحِيَّةٍ فَحَيُّ بِأَحْسَنَ مِنْهَا أُرُدُّهَا. Allah says, if you were
all
greeted
right
by a greeting, reply it, or reply better than it, or at least reply the actual thing. So if I say to you, hello, you can say to me, hello,
isn't
darling,
practice,
or you can say to me, hello,
like,
right?
Isn't this practiced by the Holy Prophet? Like?
It's practiced by all Muslims.
Yes.
It's a form of a greeting. So Islam is a kind of religion that's kind of friendly based.
Mm-hmm.
Now, greeting is a form, it's a multicultural thing
it's
that
a social like interaction. You
every
know?
Culture has
yeah
their own form of saying hello to each other.
Yes.
When you see someone, you say hello. So sometimes you say hello, sometimes you say
and it's Ara always rude in all culture not to return it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a cultural thing, and all people around the world, they have their own form of a greeting when they see each other. So in their own language, they say hello, hi, I don't know, hola, hola, even
yeah,
you know, kamaste. So in Islam, we say salam alaikum, like Jews say shalom, right?
Yeah.
It's just a form of a greeting. Why would you want to link it?
Yeah,
to the
but going back to the conversation they were having, When she said, you know, you're disrespecting the prophet, she kind of thinks, you know what? Yeah, maybe I am. So, and that goes back to like how she was brainwashed.
Because but she didn't sound
she's
like,
white, right?
But, like, no, but that's the problem. This also, this is why would you know? I think politically,
I think she's misinformed.
No, because like, the lady, when she was talking back, she was talking with such conviction and with such knowledge. She wasn't your average woman, right?
Yeah, not a person
that would miss such a small thing, you know, when it comes to Saddam. Because she was talking about women, a woman's role from an Islamic perspective.
Yes, exactly. That we're going to talk about, inshallah, in the upcoming episode.
Yeah, so she was talking in a way where she seemed to be very in touch of her faith. Not a woman that you can just easily brush off.
Okay, thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Hussein, for your nice contribution as being the guest speaker here, sitting in the studio with me, talking about or criticizing the movie Patriot's Day, directed by Peter Berg in this program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. It's Mama Jawad signing off.
When I saw it today, good versus evil, love versus hate. There's only one weapon you have to fight back with. It's love. We wrap our arms around each other. I don't think there's any way that they could ever win.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Eight-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Iran, sponsor of regional unrest or victim of terrorism? Former Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Mousavi says Iran is the biggest victim of terrorist actions, which have been taken mainly with the U.S. government's direct and indirect support. Well, the MEK, a cult-like terror group that killed 17,000 Iranians, partly in collaboration with the enemy Saddam Hussein in time of war, is now nestled in Albania, in Europe, as its headquarters. But the MEK's got more than that. It's got strongholds in several Western hotspots that host more than the MEK or MKO. While this organization is out to overthrow the establishment and take over itself, other armed terror groups, such as Al-Ahwaziya, are out to separate whole Iranian provinces. And they, too, have their members nestled away in the world's hotspots, or supported by them at least. Now, what's a wonder is how Western governments have managed to keep these criminals among their own people this long. To see how and why this happens, stay with me, Leila Faramarzi, on Iran Today. Sweden appears to want a prisoner swap to rescue a designated Israeli spy. That would be an Ahmad Reza Jalali for a Hamid Nouri. Jalali is an Iranian, well now Swedish-Iranian, who was arrested during an academic visit to Iran in 2016 and accused of spying for Israel to help it assassinate several senior nuclear scientists. This is while Nouri was arrested upon entering Sweden in 2019 and is on trial for war crimes. Hard as it might be to believe Dr. Jalali, an academic, would commit treason, Sweden's support makes you wonder, given it would be an unequal prisoner swap, case-wise and time-wise.
When the topic of prison exchange is raised, a swap is for when the two sides are charged with the same crimes and there's a balance. But when a person who was a simple judiciary official was taken into custody years after his retirement on a trip by an illegal court for completely political reasons is put on trial, you cannot ask for a swap here with a real spy. We are certain Jalali is charged for spying, but we won't go into the details of that case. Nonetheless, espionage by this person may have been proven, and he may have received a death sentence. In essence, the charges against these two people are not the same and are independent cases. And these efforts to make this swap take place shows that the Sweden government really wants Jalali. Meaning if Jalali was not important to the Swedish government, it wouldn't try to reclaim him.
Iran has no intention of doing a swap or releasing Jalali for that matter. Judiciary spokesman Zabiullah Khodayan on May the 10th confirmed there was no connection between the Jalali and Nouri cases, unless perhaps Nouri was arrested for a swap or sending a message to the Iranian government.
Hamid Nouri was arrested, held in solitary confinement for a very long time and denied the right to an attorney, and during this time under various pressures he was deprived of basic rights given by civilized countries. But the strangeness of this case comes when the Swedish court begins procedures and the prosecutor reads the indictment. Then it's the turn of the plaintiffs, who are former members of the Mujahideen Khal organization, or the MKO, and they express their legal action against the defendant, and witnesses give their testimony against the defendant, meaning Hamid Nouri. We see that no witness testimony is given against Hamid Nouri, neither from witnesses nor those who are members of the MKO.
A Norway-based campaign group, Iran Human Rights, has accused Iranian officials of threatening to execute Jalali in retaliation for the war crimes trial of Nouri. But Jalali was convicted 2 years earlier than Nouri, so if anything, it would work the other way round. Iran's Supreme Court upheld the death sentence for Jalali in 2017, and he will be executed by 21st of May this year. This is while Nouri was arrested in 2019 and faces life in jail. Jalali was given Swedish citizenship in late February 2018, according to Stockholm. International human rights organizations claim Jalali confessed under torture. How do we know that he is a spy indeed?
The case of Jalali has no relation with the case of Hamid Nouri. Mr. Jalali was arrested 2 years before Hamid Nouri. He was a doctor in Iran before leaving the country. He had links with the Israeli spy agency Mossad. He was in communication with them and had leaked intelligence to Mossad. While he was in the country, he worked with two strategic ministries on a project basis. In a set of televised confessions, it says he came to Iran and collected information on the whereabouts of Shahid Shahriari and Shahid Ali Mohammadi. When Jalali goes back to Europe, he was in communication with Mossad. He was fully aware that he wasn't taking scientific information out of the country.
But Nouri in Sweden was charged with international war crimes and human rights abuses in connection with the executions of more than 100 people at Gohardasht prison in Karaj in 1988, the key phrase being in connection with. Sounds awful, except that claims against him are mostly implied by the MKO. Regional terror groups are no enigma, and there's no question of their crimes. The same goes for Iran's homegrown terrorists, anti-Iran groups that are housed and or supported by the West, via Iran's regional rivals such as Saudi Arabia, and partly at the behest of Israel, the West's military camp in the region, West Asia.
Last year, the Lebanese newspaper Ra'y Al Yawm published a series of important documents about cyber units and robots. Israeli regime has roughly 100 units in this regard. It's interesting to know these units even use schools and students to influence various political figures in different countries. It's not limited to Iran. They're also investing in Arab fields as well. Saudi Arabia is doing the same. The New York Times newspaper reported Saudi Arabia has invested some $150 million in this field to expand its cyber war network.
The Mujahideen-e Khalq organization, MKO or MEK, was established in 1965 in a bid to overthrow the Shah or King at gunpoint. It harbored an anti-Western and anti-US ideology and even killed many US officials in this country. Not to leave the best of the Americans out, they also kidnapped the US ambassador to Iran. Former U.S. President Bill Clinton designated the group as an FTO, foreign terrorist organization, in 1997. While it was on that terror list, however, it received training from the Bush administration, according to the prize-winning journalist Seymour Hersh. The MEK training took place at the Department of Energy's Nevada National Security Site, about 65 miles northwest of Las Vegas. Finally, in 2012, the U.S. State Department removed the MEK from its list of designated terrorist organizations. This happened under intense lobbying by groups associated with Saudi Arabia and other regimes opposed to Iran, basically Israel. In spite of having mustered up nothing but hate in Iran, the MEK cult has never been a burnt-out card to the U.S. itself. If not for action in overthrowing the Iranian establishment, they have their uses for espionage. It was revealed by a 2012 NBC News report that MEK's brutal assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists has been committed via training and arming by Israel's Secret Service.
Any security intelligence agency needs people who are completely familiar with the culture of subjects of interest. For example, for the British, Germans, French, and Dutch, it's very important to employ Iranians so that they can analyze for them issues that concern Iran. Because a real Iranian national has every quality to analyze matters related to Iran rather than someone who learns Farsi as a second language, meaning they are attractive subjects for intelligence and security organizations. These individuals are employed by European intelligence agency, notwithstanding their backgrounds, and are active and even give asylum rights. These individuals are later used as pressure leverage against the Iranian government to force it to accept their request.
Whatever the early motive of the founders of the group MEK and whatever their cause for such bitterness, basically not being allowed to run in post-revolutionary presidential elections and so forth, their actions have nothing to show other than rot at the core of the group's ideology and later leaders. What they present as their militant revolutionary belief is an unfitting amalgamation of opposing ideologies, Islam, Marxism, and democracy, while they practice none. And they run the organization as a cult with extreme measures and cruelty for members and not leaders. To receive guidance with no distraction, members must devote all love and worship to the rulers Mr. and Mrs. Rajavi, who were joined by a very inexplicable marriage. Having participated in overthrowing the Shah in a bid to share power post-revolution and having failed in the latter, the MKO bombed the headquarters of the Islamic Republic Party, killing Mohammad Beheshti, the party leader, and scores of others. 2 months later, they killed the newly elected President Rajai and Prime Minister Bahonar by an embedded bomb. And so they moved to Iraq in 1986 and allied with Saddam, providing him with intelligence and even militarily attacking Iran. Now my question is, how might the Iranian system have performed so poorly for anyone outside to presume a group hated by Iranians for their treasonous acts of terror might stand a chance here? or for a group like Al-Ahwaziyya to presume infiltration into and recruiting from the populace. The name Al-Ahwaziyya refers to Ahwaz city in Iran's oil-rich south.
The separatist schools of thought and anti-revolution sentiments have existed since the beginning of the victory of the Iranian Islamic Revolution. In the early days after the revolution, you could see the Democratic Party in Kurdistan. Another example is the Communist Union in the city of Amul in the north of Iran, or the separatists of Sistan and Baluchistan and Khuzestan provinces. These have continuously existed and the enemies used them against the Iranian government. Their objective isn't to influence ordinary people. Their goal is to use these factions to divide and separate portions of the country.
Time for a short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
In brewing trouble and trying to divide and rule, America, be it Trump's America or Israel's America, was pandering quite a lot to Iran's Kurds. This is while the MKO served as an asset to Saddam Hussein when it came to his bloody crackdown on the Iraqi Shia and Kurdish populations.
Even before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, this very same MKO terrorist group played a key role in the assassination of American engineers, who used to work at Iran's oil industry, in the province of Khuzestan. But after the revolution, these terrorists first fled to Iraq and then to some European countries. During the Shia Intifada in 1991, against Saddam in the south of Iraq, the MKO group assisted Saddam in the mass murder of these Iraqis. Statistics indicate that over 150,000 of Iraqi Shias were murdered at that time.
Press reports cite MKO or MEK leader Maryam Rajavi encouraging members, "Take the Kurds under your tanks and save your bullets for the Iranian Revolutionary Guards," as cited by the New York Times of 2003. Understandably, Saddam Hussein backed them till his end in 2003. What isn't understandable is why a supporter and needler of Kurds, America, or an advocate of human rights, Sweden, would support the group. They've done despicable things to one another. Members have fallen victim to victimize.
The members of these terrorist groups, such as the MKO, who are active in Germany, France, the Netherlands, and other places, have published so much content against one another. Each one blames the other of killings, torture, and human rights abuses. It's interesting that all of these books have been written and published in Europe, meaning the members of this organization have probably published hundreds of books and articles against each other. If a legal organization or court were to analyze these claims of torture, killings, and so forth, it will conclude that members of this organization have committed human rights abuses, committed crimes against humanity over and over again, so they would expel these people from their countries immediately, as they would see them a threat for their people.
The Intercept in 2020 published an article by Murtaza Hussein and Matthew Cole. Six defectors in Europe revealed how the MEK cult isolated, disappeared, and tortured many of its cadres into submission, including forcing dozens of female members to have sex with Masoud Rajavi and undergo medical sterilization so that they could devote themselves more fully to the leader and his cause.
At one point, the French government became suspicious of the activities of Maryam Rajavi, who was leading NKO. The French government ordered the arrest of her and her companions, who were operating and living around Paris. They were detained by the French anti-terrorism police. At this time, dozens of MKO members set themselves on fire and many of them died. Some of the self-immolation survivors later spoke with French media and said they were forced to commit this act. The organization ordered its members to set themselves on fire in protest to Maryam Rajavi's arrest and told them that they would put the fires out. But that's not what happened.
In talking espionage and sabotage, there's room to talk of fake news the MKO creates and spreads online using databanks and media robots to create dissent in Iran. They have snug bases in Albania and France from whence to do this. Back in June 2019, Hossein argued that Heshmat Alavi, who wrote dozens of articles for right-wing outlets, appears not to exist. Alavi's persona is a propaganda operation run by the MEK cult. He said Heshmat Alavi is a person used by the MEK or MKO to continue its public relations work in Western countries, aiming to sway elite and public opinion by placing news articles and running social media campaigns, promoting its vision for itself as the future government of Iran. Do comment on the cyber war against Iran, the bots the Munafiqeen are employing, the false news they are spreading, and the way Israel is sort of confirming that news.
What is known as bots or unverifiable accounts are essentially cyber units controlled by Western countries. Before getting into this topic, I must say that the majority of these cyber units or bots are controlled by security and intelligence agencies of Western countries. For example, the Pentagon has a special unit that directly guides these bots, or the Israeli intelligence agency fully controls them. And in Saudi Arabia, they are also controlled by its intelligence agency. And in Europe, these bots are also guided by intelligence organizations. These bots are basically the soldiers of the hybrid cyber war.
Now, how do you get by without money? Olsi Yazeshi, a Canadian-Albanian historian, has argued that Saudi Arabia is funding the MEK cult. Perhaps the U.S. and Israel imagine they are leaving no fingerprints behind if they don't spend good money on an ex-terrorist organization. Saudis have done such a thing with Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan or Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria, and we should not be surprised if they pay the MEK bill as well, he added.
Groups like the MKO or Al-Ahwaziya or others are the same groups that were active in the early days of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. They are operating with the same objectives, and those elements that support them are still the same. Their agenda has also remained unchanged, which is to divide Iran based on what the U.S. had in mind and separate the country into several tiles and break up the Middle East into new sections. Their agenda is exactly what Condoleezza Rice said in 2012, which is for the Middle East to have a new birth. However, the result was the emergence of a resistance in the region.
Members of Al-Ahwaziya visited Saudi Arabia annually under the guise of Hajj to carry out the plans dictated by the Saudi intelligence agency. These plans included actions against innocent citizens of Iran. All said beggars the question how it would feel if Iran supported terror groups on European home soil, say in France. Earlier, I used the word ex-terrorist for the MEK or MKO. Well, they are no longer designated terrorists as far as the US and allies are concerned. But as we speak, they could be committing any crime anywhere in Europe. Here's a German example.
Naturally, the MKO has many cases of proven crimes in the EU. For example, in Germany, they used to gather money and aids in the name of the children of the MKO families who had lost their parents. But later in the court, it was proven that this group has used this money and aid for buying arms for their members in Iraq so that they can fight Iranian government alongside with Saddam.
To Iran, worse than supporting the MEK cult can only be supporting separatists. Al-Ahwazia, which aims to separate Iran's Khuzestan province, killed 25 and injured some 70 during a 2018 military parade in Ahwaz. Of the 25, half were IRGC and half civilian bystanders. Kazem Gharibabadi, secretary of Iran's High Council for Human Rights, said that Sweden has long sponsored anti-Iran terrorist groups and that it was the SMLA or Al-Ahwazia terrorist group's primary stronghold. The group's ringleader, Habib Farajullah Chab, also known as Habib Aysud, received considerable assistance from the Swedish Secret Service together with his companions. What could that be for other than espionage in return? Even when Habib Aysud was arrested at the request of the Iran Interpol in one of the Arab countries of the Persian Gulf region, the Swedes intervened immediately and returned him to Sweden on a private flight. Sweden has also been home to members of the terrorist Mujahideen Khalq organization, MKO, Gharibabadi added. Chab has been held in Iran since 2020, however, and faced trial in 2021.
European governments currently view their interests in alignment with allowing these people to stay in Europe. However, these governments are not taking care of their citizens' security and have not pursued these people based on their dangerous history and backgrounds. It seems due to political interests, similar to those like in Sweden, these countries don't carry out investigations into the crimes and allegations made by members of this organization against one another. There are no efforts to revoke their citizenship or expel them from the country. Governments have not tried to find out what really happened with these members in order to protect their citizens against these dangerous people.
Three members of the anti-Iran separatist terrorist group Al-Ahwazia were found guilty by a Danish court. The three men were convicted of financing and supporting terrorist activities in Iran in collaboration with Saudi Arabia's intelligence services, as well as engaging in espionage activities. The Danish media outlet Ritzo reported. They face years in jail, up to 12 years, for numerous offenses, including providing information about Danish and foreign organizations and individuals to the Saudi Arabian intelligence service.
Al-Ahwazia group is a sellout group that is controlled by the Saudi Arabia intelligence agency, and naturally, wherever they exist, they collect information and intelligence. A portion of the intelligence collected pertains to important government documents of Denmark for Saudi Arabia. This has caught the attention of the government of Denmark. It's a warning for European countries that when they provide shelter and resources for these terrorist groups, in the long run, it becomes dangerous for those countries. However, these nations have no authority to act on these groups because they are controlled by Mossad and the CIA.
That'll be it for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do return to the box at the same times next week, and bye for now.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
A lush green oasis near Sudan's capital, Khartoum, has turned into a haven for dozens of exotic birds from all over the world. The sanctuary shelters over 100 birds of 13 different species. Here, visitors can feed lovebirds, parakeets, rosella birds, and many more. The owner of the sanctuary says he trained the birds over the years to make them human-friendly. Akram Yahia says he has a passion for birds and enjoys it when people come around to see the sanctuary. The sanctuary, which is part of the Marshall Nature Reserve, is a welcome break for the people from the hectic life in Khartoum and nearby cities.
He tried to create an environment that doesn't exist in Khartoum. These environments exist in other parts of Sudan, such as in the west of Sudan, in the east of Sudan, in rainy areas. These areas have environments such as this one, and perhaps even more beautiful. He created this environment in Khartoum, where there is not nature at all.
Domestic and foreign tourists are allowed there only 2 to 3 hours a day. The limited hours are so that the bear's living environment is not disturbed. The owner built the 400-square-meter sanctuary 4 years ago. Over the years, he has added trees, garden, pond, and mist nozzles for cooling off against Sudan's scorching heat. Yahia says he wants to expand the reserve in the future. Indonesians have held a dazzling event to celebrate Vesak, a day traditionally observed by Buddhists in South Asia and Southeast Asia. People gathered at the sprawling Borobudur Temple in central Java and released lanterns into the sky. That's part of prayers marking the birth, enlightenment and death of Buddha, a spiritual teacher who lived during the 6th century BC. The release of lanterns symbolizes letting go of negativity. The occasion lasts 3 days, which includes collecting holy water, sending off lanterns, and meditation. This year, the event was limited to some 1,200 people because of the coronavirus risk. Because of the outbreak of the pandemic, the ceremonies typically receive 20,000 people at the massive temple complex.
Tehran is hosting the 33rd International Book Fair in person for the first time after 2 years of lockdown as a result of COVID-19. This has caused enthusiasts to visit the fair for new titles. Saman Kujuri has the story.
The 33rd Tehran International Book Fair is underway in the Iranian capital, with over 1,700 Iranian as well as 170 foreign publishers attending the event. It is the first time after 2 years of lockdown as a result of the COVID-19 that the Tehran International Book Fair is being held both in person and online. As the top Iranian book event, the fair has millions of visitors every year, including thousands of university students, scholars, and their families.
I'm very happy to see that the book fair has once again opened its doors to the visitors in person after 2 years of lockdown as a result of the COVID-19. I love reading books. To me, the Tehran Book Fair is my favorite event.
For me, the book fair is an opportunity to get my kids familiar with books. I try to take them to different book fairs so as to teach them that book is a necessity in our life. I want to raise my children with the love for book reading.
A huge number of national visitors, along with international exhibitors from different countries, make this event one of the unique cultural events. The book fair is a good opportunity for publishers to showcase their new products.
We have designed our educational books based on augmented reality, which is an interactive experience of a real-world environment where the objects that reside in the real world are enhanced by computer-generated perceptual information, and students can watch educational films related to any specific topic. It will help students better understand educational topics.
It is said that books give a soul to the universe, wings to the mind, flight to the imagination, and life to everything. And this is exactly what the book fair tries to help you achieve.
By reading books, we feel healthy is the motto of the 33rd edition of the Tehran International Book Fair, which will be running through May 21st at Imam Khomeini's Musalla. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
A group of over a dozen penguins has been released back to the sea after being given a second chance to live.
The condition of these specimens, which fortunately could be reinserted, is very common to find. They are animals that appear stranded on the coast, found with malnutrition, dehydration, hypothermia, and a high degree of parasitism. Specialists call this condition the stranded penguin syndrome.
The penguins were rescued and taken to the Mundo Marino Foundation, where they were rehabilitated. They were kept warm and were fed liquids until they could eat fish again. Before their release, blood and other samples were taken, and a chip was implanted to track them. One of the penguins was a southern rock hopper, which is a species listed as endangered. Biologists at a rescue center say there are many reasons why penguins get stranded and malnourished. These include overfishing, global warming, and other environmental changes.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Thousands of people crowd into the British city of Norwich to watch a 2-kilometer-long string of dominoes topple, while winding through town. Some 7,500 breeze blocks were set up for the event. The dominoes slinged through street buildings, windows, and even climbed up stairs and trees. The toppling lasted 30 minutes. The moving sculpture was installed across the city with the help of some 200 volunteers. The artistic director said the work was chosen partly because it was a spectacle and both disrupted the city and engaged its people.
There's a sense of anticipation that goes with the work. You will have seen people around town at the moment. Everybody's asking, what's going on? And then when they realise what it is, then there's this sense of, oh, and when are you going to knock it over? So that it's a sculpture also that gets destroyed in many ways, and that's really part of the work as well. I mean, I like to think about it as a child almost playing with the city. You know, they're setting everything up, and we all know they're going to knock it down at some point, and that's fun.
Daniel Bryan said he was excited about the project because it looked like a child had taken over the city with the joy of knocking down dominoes. The cascading dominoes ran through two cities, eventually ending at the site of Norfolk and Norwich Festival of Arts. The organizers say the goal of the installation was to bring unity to the community. Chilean paleontologists unearthed a rare, fully intact fossil of what is known as a sea dragon discovered from a melting glacier deep in Patagonia.
It is the first complete and excavated ichthyosaur that has been found in Chile. It also corresponds to one of the most complete fossils ever found on the planet for the Cretaceous period. It is the only pregnant ichthyosaur that's been found on the planet from the era between 129 and 139 million years ago. So it's incredibly important.
The 4-meter-long fossil is nicknamed Fiona and swam the seas some 250 million years ago. Scientists say this specimen will help them understand this species and its embryonic development. The expedition lasted over a month because of the remote nature of the find in the Patagonian glaciers. Paleontologists had to make a 10-hour hike just to get to the site. They also had to camp in extreme weather conditions while maneuvering tricky, rocky surfaces. But collecting and transporting the fossil was a whole other story.
As we went down excavating, weakening the rock, we realized the skeleton was mostly complete, so much that the bones were pushed inwards and we had to make 5 blocks of approximately 200 kilos each to move it.
The blocks were then airlifted to the Rio Seco Natural History Museum in southern Chile to be prepared for exhibition. The fossil was first discovered by Ruth Pedro more than a decade ago, but because of the site's harsh terrain, its extraction was a complex challenge. Scientists also discovered over 20 other specimens of the same species during the expedition, bringing the total found in the glacier area to 100.
Stopping by and listening to street musicians usually changes our mood for the rest of the day. The experience would be different if one lies under the instrument while it is being played. And that's exactly what a pianist in America has done. Colin Huggins, a busker, wheels his grand piano more than a half a mile from a mini storage to New York's Washington Square Park. He lets people lie down under the instrument and feel the vibrations from the claviers in their bodies. Colin says he wants to help people recover emotionally from the intense disconnect they had faced during COVID lockdowns.
I've always wanted to accommodate feelings in the best way possible, and I wanted to do it with music, and this is the best way I figure out how to do it. Maybe someday I'll figure out a way to do it even better, and I won't need to push this piano here. But as of now, this is the best I've got.
New York was one of the hardest hit cities by COVID in the U.S. Like other places, the major city imposed lockdowns and tough curbs to contain the virus. Despite that, Colin continued playing on the streets, frequently to an audience of zero. He says he strongly believes that everything will be okay. Cambodian fishermen aiming for small fish were shocked to see the surprise catch tied to their hook. This creature was nothing but an endangered giant freshwater stingray, which had swallowed the fishermen's catch. It was 4 meters long and weighed 180 kilos. The female leviathan is one of the rarest species of fish in Southeast Asia. Therefore, a team of international experts helped unhook the stingray to release it back to the waters unharmed.
All right, so we've just released our giant stingray back into the wild. She's kind of hanging out on the surface of the river here. It's amazing to be able to see her swimming around in her natural habitat and to have participated in the release of this giant stingray today.
The giant stingray was caught in the Mekong River, an important habitat for different species of fish, including huge catfish and barb. However, experts say the river's underwater ecosystem has been damaged by massive plastic wastes. Environmentalists constantly warn that building dams on the Mekong River is also destroying its large fish stock.
Scaling Mount Everest is only a dream for many and a once-in-a-lifetime achievement for most professional mountaineers. Well, not for this Nepali Sherpa, who has now repeated the feat for a record 26th time. 52-year-old Kami Rita led a group of other Sherpa climbers along the traditional Southeast Ridge route to the world's tallest peak. In the process, he beat his own previous record set last year. Rita first scaled Everest in 1994 and has been making the trip nearly every year since then. The Sherpa community is an ethnic group indigenous to the Himalayan region. They are expert mountain navigators who also carry heavy loads. Everest stands nearly 9,000 meters above sea level. The mountain has been climbed more than 10,000 times since it was first scaled in 1953. The bad news is more than 300 people have died trying.
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.